I see so many familiar faces. I see new faces. I can't wait to get to meet you. We're just thrilled to be here. It's just... it's honestly emotional. It's been, like 2 years, I think. Miss you guys. Really appreciate Mo singing the songs that he led for us. Appreciate the prayers that were offered. The short talk that Robert gave us to help us prepare our minds for the Lord's Supper. Thank you for being here this morning. And I appreciate the opportunity to speak. We're going to be talking about the providence of God in just a moment. I appreciate James reading Romans chapter 8 for us, because that will be our main text. We'll be looking at that this morning. And keep your finger there, and while you're thinking about that, if you allow me, just give you maybe a brief update about how we're doing. maybe not. let's stick to important stuff. I'll tell you all about us later. The invisible hand of God, what does that mean? I've heard it used in prayer. I've used it in prayer. Lord, please have your hand upon sister so-and-so, because she's sick. Or, Lord, please have your hand upon this good group of Christians here that are laboring. What do we mean when we ask that, when we beseech the Lord, have your hand upon us? I think we all know we're talking about His providence. We're asking for His providential care to be upon us. You know, the providence of God is a really broad subject, and honestly, it can't be covered in one sermon. You know, there's just too much. But what I'm going to attempt to do today is to look at what Paul has to say here in the 8th chapter of Romans, and we're also going to look at some Bible stories where we can clearly see the providence of God. The question is, what is God doing right now in the lives of His people? You know, we live in a privileged time where we have the complete Word of God. It's all revealed. It's all been recorded. The Bible is so ready and easily available. We probably have a dozen copies of it or more in one form or another. You know, but wouldn't it be so awesome if we'd lived in the time of Jesus, to see the Son of God, to hear Him preach, to see miracles of healing? I mean, then we could really believe, right? We could really believe if we lived then. We could really be close to God and understand and feel His presence, His providential care on us. Wouldn't that be nice? What is God doing in the lives of His people today? It's an interesting question that has a wide range of ideas and thoughts from one extreme to another. For example, from people of faith, there are those that believe that God is involved with everything in somebody's life. That He still works supernaturally today. Guardian angels, the whole works. And then on the other extreme, there are some who are not quite sure that God is involved in much of anything at all these days. You know, when I was a young person, I didn't really give the providence of God much thought. It's just not high on the priority list when you're young, especially when you're young in the faith. You're not thinking about, what is God doing in my life? You know, what purpose am I here? What is He working in my life? I think it's a common struggle for young adults. We've got two young adults in our household. Connor's 22 and Sean's 18, pushing 19. And I'm constantly trying to push them to see that God has a purpose for them. He's working in their lives. But, you know, for young people, I think it's a struggle. I think it's also hard for people who are struggling. If you've had a difficult life, you know, it's hard to see good when you don't feel good. But I think it's what's important is we believe what God has revealed through Scripture. And I believe that God has revealed enough to know that His providence is real, and that we could have a general understanding of how it works. You know, when you look at the stories contained in the Bible, it's really hard not to see God's providence. And it really doesn't matter where you turn in the Bible, Old Testament or New, what story is your favorite story. There's an impression stamped on our minds of God's providence as you look at these stories. And after all, isn't that one of the reasons you think that God would share these stories with us? I know there's other reasons. I know we can learn from them, their great faith, or we can learn from their mistakes so we don't repeat them. We can be encouraged by their faith. We can be encouraged by their courage so we can have strength to carry on. But to see God working in the lives of these people, we have to see that, right? That's certainly one of the reasons why God has given us these stories, so that we can see how God works in our lives too. The two that stand out, I think, the most are the story of Esther and Joseph. Esther has something like 10 chapters, and all 10 chapters just ooze of God's providence. Have you ever thought about some of these things? I mean, why and how was Esther, a Jewish girl, chosen to be Miss Persia from among a field of beautiful women of an empire that stretched from India to Ethiopia? It says there was 127 provinces. How was it that she was chosen to be the next queen? And for that matter, Queen Vashti herself, to make the rash decision to disobey the king, knowing what the punishment would probably be. And now she's conveniently out of the way so that Esther can rise. Why and how was Mordecai's ear in hearing distance of a plot to kill the king? This is a big empire. There's a lot of people. But it's Mordecai who hears the plot. When Haman had had a plot against the Jews and they were facing extermination, he already had the letter, the sign with the signet ring. Things did not look well. But on that particular night, the king was sleepless that night. Why? And why did he call for the book of records to be heard and read? And how is it that out of all the book of records, that it's the exact page that talks about Mordecai intervening and saving the king's life? How is that possible? Is that all a coincidence? Do we really believe that? Is that blind luck, a roll of the dice? As some would say. That's all I could fit on the slide, by the way. There's so much about the story of Esther that you cannot come away with anything but this is God's providential care. Joseph is similar. I often wonder why Jacob sent his favorite son to seek out his brothers. It's, you know, there's danger out there. And Jacob has servants. Why not send a servant to go see how the flock was doing? Why send Joseph? Why is it that Ishmaelites just happened to be coming by at the moment, you know, at a critical moment where Joseph was in a pit and some brothers wanted to have him killed and some wanted to make sure that he lived? Why are they coming by right then, right now? And why is it that they're headed to Egypt at that moment? Why is it that of all the people, somebody important like Potiphar is the one that purchases Joseph? And this one I can't get over. Why is he imprisoned and not executed for the charge that was against him? The charge was a serious charge that I think in those days would have carried executions, especially for a slave. But he was imprisoned, not executed. Why were the cupbearer and the baker imprisoned at the same time? Why did they dream? Why did Pharaoh dream? And then why finally later on did the cupbearer remember? Oh, that's right, Joseph. He's lingering down there in prison for 20 years. There's a guy down there that can help you, Pharaoh. I mean, it's just God's providence, is it not? And if we can see the providence of God working in the lives of these people, then shouldn't we see Him working in ours? I want to share one more with you. It's not on the screen. Conveniently, I've got a blank screen there. Good. I just want to share one more with you. And this one kind of flies under the radar a bit. When Israel was crossing the Jordan to take possession of the promised land, the nations in Canaan rose up and took arms against them. They did what they could to try and destroy the Israelites. They continually sought out ways to exploit any weakness to destroy them. And one of the problems was because the Israelites didn't eliminate all the Canaanites like the Lord told them. So they were a thorn in the side. They were, for generation and generation, they were a pain, always seeking to exploit any weakness and destroy the Israelites. Now, with that environment and understood now, consider one of the commands that God gave back in Exodus to Israel through Moses. God commanded that all men in Israel would assemble and travel to Jerusalem 3 times a year for 3 important feasts. Feast of Unleavened Bread, Feast of the Weeks, and Feast of Booths. All the men. Have you ever thought or considered how vulnerable all the villages and cities were on these occasions? All that was left were women, children, and sickly people. 3 times a year, every year, for generation after generation, these cities and villages were vulnerable. And yet, there is not a single example of which I'm aware that Israel's enemies attacked these cities or did a raid on these cities during these times. I couldn't find a single occasion. And so just turn back with me to Exodus real quick. We'll be in Romans in just a minute. But the answer is in the Bible. The answer is God's providence. Again, there's 3 feasts a year where all the men were to travel to Jerusalem, leaving all these cities vulnerable. Surely this would be a perfect opportunity for enemies to attack. But when God gave these commands, notice in verse 23 and 4 of Exodus chapter 34. Exodus 34, 23 and 24. 3 times a year, all your males are to appear before the Lord of God, the God of Israel. Notice 24. For I will drive out nations before you and enlarge your borders, and no man shall covet your land when you go up there 3 times a year to appear before the Lord. Did you see that? That's why nobody attacked. Because the Lord made it so. He said nobody is going to bother you these 3 times a year. And of course we know the Lord keeps His promises. That's just 3 examples in the Bible. But again, as you're combing through, appreciate the stories more. Read and have eyes that see the providence of God working in the lives of people. Let's get to our text, Romans chapter 8. Thank you, James, for reading that. We're looking at Romans chapter 8, verse 28 and 31 to see what Paul had to say about God's providence. From this verse, we're going to look at 5 things that I think we can understand about the providence of God and why we can trust in it. The first thing is the certainty of it. Did you notice there in verse 28 how he begins? 3 little words. And we know. And we know. Folks, that leaves little doubt. I mean, when you know something, you know it. Right? If I say to you, I know such and such, what message am I conveying to you? I'm saying I'm certain of it. I know it. We sing a song sometimes, My Redeemer Lives. The chorus, what are the words? I know, my Redeemer lives. What are we singing to each other? What are we saying? We're certain of it. We are certain the Lord has risen. Amen. And so when we know something, folks, we know it. There's no doubt. And Paul says, to begin this, we know. The certainty of it. In Acts the 17th chapter, Paul was on Mars Hill. He's speaking to the men of Athens. And he says to those people, the men there, in Him we live and move and exist. In Him we live, move and exist. It's because of Him that we live and move and exist. The providence of God involves an active preservation and care for His creation. That's what he's saying there. We live and move and exist because of God. In the Colossians, the letter to the Colossians, Paul says, He is before all things, and in Him all things hold together. God is the creator and sustainer of all things. Creation itself didn't just show up, and it doesn't have the ability to just take care of itself. God is doing that. He is active. He is present today. So I think one thing for sure, God is not doing nothing. He's not retired. Okay? And so we can cross that off the list. He is active. He's working. In fact, the providence of God is something that we can see. The psalmist says, Oh, taste and see the Lord is good. How blessed is the man who takes refuge in Him. Now, it may be hard sometimes to put a finger on it, because He works in mysterious ways. But if we're looking, we can see it. In another place in Psalms 118, verse 6, The Lord is my helper, I will not be afraid. And of course, on the screen, chapter 37, verse 25, I have been young and now I am old, yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken, or his descendants begging for bread. First thing we need to understand about God's providence is that it is real, and we can see it. We can observe it, and we can be certain of it. Secondly, the specificity of it. You notice there he says that God is working all things together for good to those who love God. Those who love God. You see that? There's a distinction that Paul is making there. There's a select group of people where there's a specially reserved providence. And we'll talk about that in just a minute. But in general, I think the Bible supports there is a general providence of God. That's for all. In Matthew, the 5th chapter, verse 45, Sermon on the Mount, these are Jesus' words. He says, For He causes His sun to rise on the evil and the good, and He sends the rain on the just and the unjust. And again, in Psalm 145:9, The Lord is good to all. His compassion rests on all He has made. That's just two verses out of the Bible. There are literally thousands of passages that we could look at that have similar language showing us that God, by creating and sustaining the heavens and the earth, puts us all under His providential care. You notice Jesus said, For He causes His sun. It's His sun. It's not the sun. It's His sun. He causes it to rise and set every day. He brings the rain that causes all the growth and our food and crops to grow. It's not our doing. It's not creation itself. It's God. And we are all under His providential care. And I want you to think about that, because there's a lot of people who don't believe God in God. There's a lot of people who don't believe that He's working for them. And yet, they're all under His providential care and this general providence as well. Amazing. But what about this special providence that Paul's talking about? What does he mean by those that love the Lord? What does that look like? Who are these people? Who are they? In John the 14th chapter, Jesus is speaking with His disciples. And in verse 15, He says, If you love Me, you'll keep My commandments. A few verses later, in chapter 21, He says the same thing. If you love Me, you'll keep My commandments. Verse 23, Those that love Me, I'll keep My commandments. He repeats it like three times. In fact, in verse 24, He goes on to say, If you don't keep My words, you don't love Me. Period. What does it mean, those that love the Lord? It's those that are keeping His commandments. There is a providence of God reserved for them that Paul is talking about, that love the Lord. And we know what that means because Jesus told us what it means. Thirdly, and probably my most favorite, the capacity of it. The capacity of it. Do you notice there in verse 28, Paul says that we know that God causes all things, not just some things, not just partial things, not 50% of things, but all things. God works all things. It was just a sample list of passages I put together that have all things connected to God. There's a whole bunch, but here's a few. The builder of all things is God. Hebrews 3:4. Upholding all things by the word of his power. Hebrews 1:3. We already looked at Colossians 1. Earlier in Acts chapter 17, verse 25, same sermon Paul's given. Since he himself gives to all people life and breath and all things. How about the account in Matthew 19 when the disciples question, who could be saved? You know, Jesus just finished teaching some difficult things and they're like, who could be saved? And he said, well, with men, it's impossible. But with God, all things are possible. And of course, that famous passage in Philippians, which we're going to look at later on. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. Does God ever reach his capacity? Does he have a limit? You know, sometimes as parents, we reach our capacity. We reach our limit with our children. You know, timeouts are supposed to be for children, but I think sometimes it's the parents that need a timeout. They need a break, right? I mean, sometimes we just have had, we just reached our capacity with one or more of our children. Does that happen to God? Does he look down at Eric and say, that's it, I've had enough. You know what I mean? That's my limit. Eric, I've reached my limit with you. I'm done. Does he have a capacity or a limit? You know, there's somewhere around 8 billion people in the world today. Yeah, that's right. We crossed 8 billion this year, sometime in January 2025. Look that little factoid up. 8 billion people in this world today. Can God handle all things for 8 billion people? Yes. Yes, he can. Yes, he can. 8 billion people, he can handle all things. The capacity of God's grace, mercy, and love is limitless. And as a result, Paul reminds us in Philippians 4:13 that we can do all things. We can do all things through Jesus who strengthens us. Because God can do all things. What an encouragement. Do we trust him? Before we get to the next point, there isn't a problem we face that God cannot handle. But there are some truths that we do need to understand and realize and accept. One of those is that bad things happen to good people. In Job chapter 1, verse 8, the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? There is no one like him in terms of blamelessness and fear of the Lord." You hear that? No one. That means Job was number one at being a servant of God. And of course, we know how that story unfolds. I don't have the time to really get into it, but we know that story. We understand the suffering of Job. We know what happens. And we understand as a consequence of sin, living in this broken and corrupt world makes even those that are trying to please the Lord to suffer. We know that. And Job is a case in point. But the second thing we need to realize and accept is that not everything happens for a reason. Or perhaps I should say, has a reason given. You know, throughout the 40-something chapters of Job, I don't see God explaining himself or giving Job a reason for his suffering. And yet as humans, it's a tendency of ours to look for the reason, right? If something's gone wrong, there's got to be a reason And there's got to be somebody to assign the blame to. It's somebody's fault. We don't have time to go through the book of Job, but in one of the Lord's responses to Job, you'll find this in chapter 40, verse 1. He says to Job, "Will the fault finder contend with the Almighty?" What I'm trying to get us to understand, brethren, is that when all of our focus and effort is in search of the reason, in search for the fault, it makes it so much harder to see His providence working in our lives. We know that God has a limitless capacity to work on our lives. But it doesn't mean that all things will always go well. And I think we know that. But it was important to bring up. The fourth thing that we can learn and understand about God's providence is the activity of it. I only need my glasses when I'm reading the Bible, because it's the print's too small. Alright, so verse 28. "And we know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God." Those two words there, "work together." He's causing all things to work together. You know, the Greek word for "together" there gives us our English word for synergy. And I'm not an expert on synergy, but I've researched enough. I looked up the definition. I have a general understanding of what it means. And basically, it's the interaction or cooperation of multiple things working together for a better result than it would be for each individual thing. If I can explain that correctly. Now think about this in a spiritual sense. When think about the stories we looked at with Esther and Job. Look at all the events that transpired. Look at all the people making all those different choices. And we can see God using all of that and working it all together for His desired goal, His desired purpose, for that greater good for Esther and Job. In fact, Joseph recognized it. You know, in Genesis chapter 50, when he was talking to his brothers, he told them, you know, "You meant this for evil, but the Lord meant it." He understood years later. He could see it. All that stuff that happened to him, all that time in prison, all that wasted years of his life, he could see it all now being worked together for a good thing. And so in our lives, you think about the different chain of events that have gotten you to where you are today. The good choices, the bad choices, the everything in between. Can you see the Lord working in your life, putting that all together for good? Philippians chapter 1, verse 6. Paul says, "He who began a work in you will perfect it until the day of the Lord." Can we see that? Can we see the Lord working that way? I hope so. Let me try to use a different approach, a different angle to try to explain this working together. Everybody likes chocolate chip cookies, I'm assuming. Maybe not, I don't know. Everybody likes them. What if I were to force you to eat all the ingredients separately? You know what I'm saying? So like if I give you a half a cup of white sugar, I've got the whole ingredient here, a quarter cup of brown sugar, teaspoon of vanilla, you know what I'm saying, a raw egg, 8 tablespoons, the whole 9 yards. If I gave each one of those to you separately and made you choke them down, how would you feel about that? I don't think you would like that. Each individual ingredient, trying to eat that? No, that's gross. But when they're all put together, to its completion, to its finish, well, you know, it's a chocolate chip cookie. I'll eat that. Right? That's how God works in our lives. He's taking everything, all of it together, in this synergetic way, and working it for good. Now, some of these things that we have to go through, we don't really appreciate that much. And we might ask questions why. We might try to find fault. Let's try our best to avoid that. But, you know, each individual, you know, circumstance, we might not feel comfortable. We might not like going through it. But like Joseph, can we have the eyes that see that God is still, even in those moments, working in our lives, putting things together? After all, He sees more than we can. He knows what's best for us, which leads us to our fifth and final point about God's providence. There in Romans chapter 8, what is behind all this? What's the purpose? What's the guarantee of it? The Lord's doing it for good. He's doing it for good. It may not always feel that way, but He's doing it for good. But folks, it's the good that comes as He defines it, not as we define it. Amen. Proverbs chapter 14, verse 12, I believe it says, there's a way that seems right to a man, but its path leads to destruction. Sometimes we may think we know what we need or what's good and what's better for us, but we need to have faith and just trust in God that He actually knows what's good for us. And so, yeah, we may have to suffer now in order to partake in true glory. That's true. Romans 8, verse 18. But we need to trust that God's good is better than our good. At the end of the day, we need to trust in Him. You've been a patient audience. I appreciate it. Let's go ahead and just make some applications about some of the stuff we've been discussing. The point we just finished. Our good. God is working all things out for our betterment. We need to know that. We need to trust in that. We need to believe that. And here's the other thing. God cares about the smallest of details. Nothing escapes His notice. In fact, with God, there seems to be no big or small. It's all important to Him. We make a big deal out of big things, not so much out of small things. I don't think God does. Everything matters to Him. Scripture tells us He cares for the birds of the air, the flowers of the field. He knows the number of hairs that are left on my head. I mean, there's just no detail that escapes His notice that He doesn't care about. Number three, providence gives us, I think, a new perspective on our tragedy. We talked about this. We're going to have some difficult times. But God is involved with us even in our worst moments. Yeah, even in those moments when we rebel and sin. He still cares. He sent His Son for us. Sometimes we're going to be left to wonder why. Providence doesn't always tell us everything we would want to know. But it does assure us that God is there, and that He cares for us, and He's working for us, even in our darkest moments. Take comfort. Please, take comfort in that. Number four, providence gives us courage to keep going on in the tough times. And that's really an important part of this lesson. It's encouragement. I want to encourage you to get through difficult times. We all had them. And some have had harder times than others. Allow it to give you courage to keep going, to persevere. Providence doesn't promise an easy road, but it does provide evidence and a promise that God is working something good out. There is a promise. It's that God is working for you. He's working for your betterment. Number five, providence tells us that God has a purpose for our being here. The last three verses of our text, 29 to 31, let's read it again. For those whom He foreknew, He also predestined to become conformed to the image of His Son, so that He would be the firstborn among many brethren. And these whom He predestined, He also called. And these whom He called, He also justified. And these whom He justified, He glorified. What then shall we say to these things? If God is for us, who is against us? God has a purpose for us all, and His ultimate purpose, you see here, is what? To shape us into the image of His Son. Be conformed into the image of His Son. Remember back in Philippians chapter 1, verse 6, we said, He who began a good work in you will see it to its completion. He'll bring it to its perfection until the day of Jesus. That's what He's doing in our lives, folks. He's conforming us into the image of His Son, so that when His Son returns, we can stand justified, even though we're not worthy. God is doing that in our lives. So the invitation is for us all here today, really. Whether to start this journey or to keep it going, allowing God to work in our lives, shaping us, molding us into the image of His Son. Does that sound good to you? If we can help you in any way, we encourage you to let someone know today as we stand and sing this invitation song.